What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the first decentralized digital currency. Bitcoins are digital coins you can send through the internet. Compared to other alternatives, Bitcoins have a number of advantages. Bitcoins are transferred directly from person to person via the net, without going through a bank or clearinghouse. This means that the fees are much lower, you can use them in every country, your account cannot be frozen, and there are no prerequisites or arbitrary limits. Let's look at how it works. Bitcoins are generated all over the internet by anybody running a free application called a Bitcoin miner. Mining requires a certain amount of work for each block of coins. This amount is automatically adjusted by the network such that Bitcoins are always created at a predictable and limited rate. Your Bitcoins are stored in your digital wallet, which might look familiar if you use online banking. When you transfer Bitcoins, an electronic signature is added. After a few minutes, the transaction is verified by a miner and permanently and anonymously stored in the network. The Bitcoin software is completely open source, and anybody can review the code. Bitcoin is changing finance the same way the web changed publishing. When everyone has access to a global market, great ideas flourish. Let's look at some examples of how Bitcoins are already used today. You can purchase video games, gifts, books, servers, and alpaca socks. Several currency exchanges exist where you can trade your Bitcoins for dollars, euros, and more. Bitcoins are a great way for small businesses and freelancers to get noticed. It doesn't cost anything to start accepting them, there are no chargebacks or fees, and you'll get additional business from the Bitcoin economy. For your first Bitcoins and more information, visit weusecoins.com.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik. And John, there's a phenomenon out there that you and I both kind of scratch our head about. It's called cryptocurrency, otherwise known as AKA Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's confusing. It's confusing, though. I'm told my brother tells me that Bitcoin may not be the thing that makes it, but the what is it, the block and chain?
Well, blockchain.
Block, yeah.
I mean, Blockbuster is already gone.
That's right. That's
but
right.
But this will take its place.
But that technology may change the way we do business on the web. So there's a good side to Bitcoin. But Bitcoin, I'm just kind of confused about.
Well, let's be honest about it. Many places around the world already, their phone is their currency. And you see a lot of people paying for things through their phone at Starbucks and other places. So this is not that far afield from the whole notion, why do we need these dollars, which we are told, by the way, John, are contaminated with all kinds of germs. They're passed from one person to the next. We don't know who's been handling this stuff. Isn't there a better way in the electronic age than really taking physical currency?
Well, I don't know about that, because the electronic age still kind of scares me a little bit, because you look at Equifax, they stole all our information. So who's to say electronically that there's not another Larry out there?
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, he's going to clean you out, you know?
Well, you know, with all the new technologies of facial recognition or your thumbprint or whatever it may be, I think the forms of identification are going to be getting more clear to us as to what we can do. But having said that, my concern is, see, I just don't understand. If there isn't something like a currency, how do we evaluate and value this currency? That's the thing that's
right.
Always eluded me.
That's the other part of it. Right.
Like, how do we know?
And then people are mining these things. So what you do is you solve puzzles.
Where do they mine them? At a troll farm?
I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a whole different conversation.
But I'm reading a little bit about talking about solving puzzles and getting Bitcoins, you know?
I know. I don't quite understand some of it. But I will say that the gentleman that we brought forward to help us with this is great, the American Enterprise Institute. And he really does lay it out. We ask him all of these very fundamental questions on your behalf because John and I, frankly, want to know too. And he gives us really clear answers. I don't know that I could understand them all, but he made it pretty clear as to how this thing really works.
Yeah, but I guess ultimately, from what I understand, the technology that they've developed for security purposes is pretty darn good. So if Bitcoin doesn't make it, at least this may help with future financial dealings on the web.
Right, so this may be a precursor.
Right.
Look at it today. Where's MySpace?
Right.
Well, it's now Facebook.
Oh,
it evolves into something. So, John, a guy walks up to an ATM machine and it spits out a Bitcoin. What does he do? Does he spit it back? What do you do with that?
Yeah, it doesn't spit. You mine them.
I know. Let's go mine some Bitcoin if you don't mind.
Well, on the line with us on America Trends is Mark Jamieson with the American Enterprise Institute, and he looks at a whole range of things related to the impact of technology on business, technology's impact on the economy. And I think, Mark, a lot of us are really curious. We have no idea what the phenomenon of the Bitcoin really is. Can you break it down for us concisely?
Yeah, basically, Bitcoin is a software program that is spread across a large number of computers around the world. And that software works like a ledger. So, for example, what can happen with that is I could have on my phone a piece of software called a Bitcoin wallet. And it would say I have, let's say, 10 Bitcoins. And you would have on your computer or cell phone a Bitcoin wallet that says you have 5. And I want to buy something from you. I could send you 3 or 4 or 5, whatever the price might be, Bitcoins from my wallet to yours. And all these computers around the world would process that and make sure it was valid. And then if it tests out to be valid, the transaction is completed at a very small cost.
And who is entering into that as a middleman, or is that the whole point of this, to get all the middlemen out of the way? And yet it's the middlemen in our relationship with credit card companies, whether it's a bank or another financial institution, that gives us the solidity and the sense that this is a real transaction.
Well, that's exactly the point, at least from some perspectives. When you look at where this all came from, it came from a small group of people who were trying to figure out how they could get rid of the middlemen. They were suspicious of governments managing markets. They were suspicious of governments managing information. They wanted to figure out how they could have an economy, have a currency, if you will, that got rid of the banking system as a middleman and got rid of the government as kind of the overseer. And that group developed this idea. For them, the point about having no middleman was exactly their point. Now, as this Bitcoin has grown in popularity, the number of people involved in it has grown, and the types of people involved in it have changed. And so there are some situations where you're starting to see people acting a little bit more like a middleman, but the system really has no middleman formally anyway.
So when I'm looking at it, and you pointed to the fact that one of us has 10, the other has 5, how did we even get the 10 or the 5? Who legitimized that? In the old days, of course, the gold standard, which we've talked about on our podcast, or you had the full faith and credit of the government, or you had a bank involved. How am I to give any legitimacy to the value of what I might have in my wallet?
Well, that was the innovation that Bitcoin really came up with. It's called a blockchain. And for years, people have been trying to figure out how they could have an electronic currency that did not rely upon governments. But there were just some technical problems they could never solve. Blockchain has become the basic innovation that allows that. And what blockchain is, it's this database that's spread all over all these computers that has all the transactions that have ever occurred in Bitcoin. And every few minutes, a few more transactions are added to the chain, and they're added as a block, thus the name blockchain. And when they're validated, then they become part of the history that's archived. But to how it started with a computer solving puzzles. And whenever the computer solves puzzles, it gets rewarded with a few Bitcoin. That's how Bitcoin's produced. That's how it all started, with that software program that said, if you solve this puzzle, you get some Bitcoin. And that then developed that part of that history of where it all came from and how it gets traded.
And when we look at it today, many of us have been reading about this phenomenal run-up as it relates to the value of Bitcoin, and then we saw a bit of a crash. I mean, what are we to believe about the viability of this as a monetary exchange?
Okay, so let me start with the last part there about viability. Something that Bitcoin is telling us, and there are other what we call cryptocurrencies, that's the broad umbrella term for things like Bitcoin. They are telling us that there are deficiencies in our current financial currency systems that aren't working well for particular people in the economy. And they might have lots of different kinds of interests. So these currencies like Bitcoin are filling a need that traditional currencies like dollars, euros, whatever that country might have, aren't doing so well. And so they're serving that need for us. But if you think about then, what about the volatility and what about this ramp up in value? So let me start with the volatility first. The volatility is occurring for a couple of reasons. One is that there's been this evolution in the culture of who's using Bitcoin. At first, it was a culture of people, like I said, that were kind of really suspicious of governments and the banking systems, and et cetera, and they were the primary users of it. Over time, that culture has changed of who's involved, and that has given us some changes in how it is, its volatility, if you will, because everyone is thinking about Bitcoin as something for the future. You know, we're building some economic value, we're building some economic transactions on Bitcoin. Anytime something threatens the beliefs about that future, the price drops. And then when people kind of recover from it, the price jumps back up. So since you have this fluctuation that's going on about how people are thinking about the future of it, that's causing volatility. Then you have the run-up in value. The run-up in value is caused by two things. One is this kind of growing belief that this has a place in our worldwide economy. We're sorting out exactly what that place might be, but there's something to it. The other thing is the amount of Bitcoin that's available doesn't grow very fast. So the people's anticipation of value is growing much faster than the actual supply. And that's causing the value of Bitcoin to rise over time.
Would I have to use some form of traditional currency in order to start building a Bitcoin value for myself and a Bitcoin wallet, or no?
You don't have to. Most of us, that's exactly how we get started. We download a wallet from, there are several different providers of them out there, and we would exchange some other currency we have, which may be another cryptocurrency, it may be dollars, maybe euros, and we buy bitcoins and put them in our wallet in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only way. Another way is to load the Bitcoin software onto your computer and become one of those computers around the world that is trying to solve these puzzles. And if you solve a puzzle, or you're the first one to solve it, or if you're part of a coalition that is the that includes the first one to solve it, then you get some Bitcoin as a reward for doing that.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All so right. Well, that sure dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct
we
message us at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
What is Bitcoin mining? Bitcoin operates as a peer-to-peer network. This means that everyone who uses Bitcoin is a tiny fraction of the bank of Bitcoin. But where do Bitcoins come from? With paper money, a government decides when to print and distribute money. Bitcoin doesn't have a central government. With Bitcoin, miners use special software to solve math problems and are issued a certain number of Bitcoins in exchange. This provides a smart way to issue the currency and also creates an incentive for more people to mine. And since miners are required to approve Bitcoin transactions, more miners means a more secure network. The Bitcoin network automatically changes the difficulty of the math problems, depending on how fast they're being solved. In the early days, Bitcoin miners solved these math problems with the processors in their computers. Soon, miners discovered that graphics cards used for gaming were much better suited to this kind of math. Graphics cards are faster, but they use more electricity and generate a lot of heat. The first commercial Bitcoin mining products included chips that were reprogrammed for mining Bitcoin. These chips were faster, but still power-hungry. ASIC, or application-specific integrated circuit chips, are designed specifically for Bitcoin mining. ASIC technology has made Bitcoin mining even faster while using less power. As the popularity of Bitcoin increases, more miners join the network, making it more difficult for individuals to solve the math problems. To overcome this, miners have developed a way to work together in pools. Pools of miners find solutions faster than their individual members, and each miner is rewarded proportionate to the amount of work he or she provides. Mining is an important and integral part of Bitcoin that ensures fairness while keeping the Bitcoin network stable, safe, and secure. For more information about Bitcoin mining, visit bitcoinmining.com.
Really interesting. What about these Bitcoin ATMs? I mean, how prevalent are they, and how does that work?
Well, I've not been involved with those. I know they're in a few places, but I can't tell you that you can depend upon finding them if you travel around and want to, get some Bitcoin for dollars or get dollars for Bitcoins.
How difficult is it to make a payment today using a Bitcoin? Who's taking them? Who's not? And what is the adaption to this process as you see it? Slow? Fast? What is it like?
Well, it's probably faster than some people anticipated. Depends upon what you're trying to do. There are some retailers that have started accepting Bitcoins. But my sense is, without having analyzed the data to know for sure, is that most of the transactions occurring in Bitcoin are transactions that probably wouldn't happen if they were denominated in dollars or euros. So it's people using Bitcoin that are large Bitcoin or heavy Bitcoin users. But that's growing. That's changing. People are starting to use it more and more. We'll see how far that really goes, if it stays as a kind of specialized transaction tool or it becomes very widespread. And, of course, one of the real challenges for people here is who is it most valuable for? There's a lot of thought that this could be very powerful for developing countries, but some of the aspects of Bitcoin kind of work against that. So there are a lot of people trying to solve that problem. So that's something for us to work on for the future.
I know a lot of people have talked about the Chinese and their attempts to displace the dollar as the reserve currency around the world and have something like a petro yuan that would be out there to displace the U.S. But what about this in terms of Bitcoin taking the place of something that's been very important to the U.S. and its economic standing and perhaps allowed us to be a little flagrant in our accumulation of debt? And that is, if we lose our reserve currency status to the Bitcoin.
Well, that would certainly impact the U.S. economy. Because one of the things that's valuable about being the reserve currency is it makes it economically beneficial for other people to do business with the U.S. So that would be a hindrance on our economy. Bitcoin's got a ways to go for that. Because one of the things that makes something like the dollar valuable to people is when they put it in their bank or their wallet. When they take it out, it's got pretty much the same value as when they put it in. Bitcoin is not in that space. The volatility is an issue. And then also for to be kind of a useful currency in an economy broadly used, the growth in value is a problem as well. And let me explain why that's true. When a currency is growing in value, what that means is it's to your benefit to hang on to it and not use it. That then puts a drag on the economy because economies grow by transactions. And so if it's better for you to not spend, to not buy, than to actually engage in a transaction, that slows the economy. So Bitcoin really needs to, if it wants to be a broadly used currency and perhaps even become kind of a base currency, then that issue has to be solved.
There are a lot of people talking about this furious trading that's been going on in all of these cryptocurrencies. And the Trump administration seemed to be encouraging this. They kind of have this outlaw mentality against governments. But now we're looking at it, and they're starting to sound an alarm on Bitcoin itself because it is prone to these wild price swings and these flash crashes. Where do you think the United States government stands now in terms of trying to encourage a Bitcoin?
I think the government's really scratching its head on this. No one really has jurisdiction over it. I mean, how do you regulate a software program that is spread over multiple computers? You can't say, well, in the U.S., this software will work this way. That's just not going to happen because the software resides all over the world. So the U.S. is struggling with what to make of this. And I think it creates some good market opportunities because the problems that Bitcoin has are not things that regulation necessarily solves, but entrepreneurs can.
When we look at it, we've done another podcast on cannabis, and we were talking about the fact that a lot of the traditional tobacco companies would ultimately like to be involved if this is going to be the growth industry that many think. I would imagine the traditional banks would love to, in some way, insert themselves into this Bitcoin phenomenon, lest they be left on the sidelines. Is there any movement in that direction?
Well, there are certainly some that are experimenting with it. Can't name names on that necessarily. But some are looking seriously about this whole kind of blockchain idea because it really saves on transaction costs, and that helps them engage in international transactions much more cheaply. But for the whole bureaucracy that's built around making its living off of the 10, 20, sometimes up to 30% commissions that are paid on international transactions. To them, this is a threat. Hmm. And then they're certainly pushing back and looking for regulations that would actually keep Bitcoin and other types of cryptocurrencies from thriving.
As you look at the impact of technology on business, one of your specialties, if somebody said to you, Mark Jamieson, I want you to identify the advantages and the disadvantages of Bitcoin as simply as possible, what would they be, I mean, if you had to outline them?
Well, the advantages clearly are that it makes transactions much less expensive than the traditional financial systems. If you are a vendor and people pay you through credit cards, you have to pay MasterCard, you have to pay American Express, whoever that is. You have to pay them a certain percentage of that transaction. What you have to pay for a Bitcoin transaction is much less. Also, you get your money faster. A Bitcoin transaction would typically be approved within 10 minutes, and you've got your money. With some of these others, it could take a few hours before the transaction actually clears. And with more traditional banking systems, it may even take days before the money's actually yours to do something with. So the speed is very helpful as well. The downsides, it's not widely accepted yet, so you only have a few people you can actually engage in transactions with. And then you've got the new risk of if as a currency, its value is fluctuating. And so if you receive $100 or $1,000 from someone in Bitcoin, an hour later, you might only have 40 or 50 or 60% of that actually in your wallet.
So how risky is somebody's early adaptation to all of this or buying in a way that may be beyond what most people are doing? What kind of risk are they taking?
Well, the risk can be fairly high because the volatility has been so high. And I had an experience a few months ago. I was in an airport and was talking with a young man who was running a Bitcoin exchange. The exchange is where Bitcoin is traded for you know, traditional government currencies or for other cryptocurrencies. And we were joking because he was on his way to Las Vegas and he was thinking, gee, you know, if I can go to Las Vegas, my risk actually goes down. So he's just kind of diversifying his risk portfolio or de-risking his portfolio was the phrase he used. So you have to be kind of careful as to what you're really doing and what your expectations are.
If I'm talking about Bitcoin, am I limiting the conversation? Because I know there are many other cryptocurrencies, and I was reading where privacy coins such as the Monero, which is designed to avoid tracking, they have climbed faster over the past 2 months as law enforcers adopt software tools to monitor people who are using Bitcoin. So how fast moving is this, and will Bitcoin be replaced by fill in the blank?
I don't know if Bitcoin will be replaced by something else, because right now it is the cryptocurrency within which most of the others can transact. So, for example, to answer part of your question, we've had about 1,000 new cryptocurrencies created in the U.S. in 2017. Well, I shouldn't say in the U.S., worldwide in 2017. That's a lot, worth several billions dollars. So this is a big thing that is happening. When someone creates a currency, and let's say that we buy it, we're one of the, quote, investors in that currency, there's generally not much we can do with it unless we can trade it for Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin kind of becomes the hub, a lot of these different cryptocurrencies. So it's got a very, very valuable role. That doesn't mean it hangs on to that role forever, because it does have that basic challenge of its growth in value being something that makes it valuable for people to hang on to it rather than use it. And so it kind of works against itself. When someone can kind of solve that basic economic problem, then whatever currency does that may be able to replace Bitcoin, but it's not clear how that's going to play out.
Given this being a computer-driven model, if you will, the Bitcoin, what are the impacts on the technology companies, and what is their desire in terms of getting into this, the Apples, the Googles, and when we see them getting into this space, what does it say to us about where this is headed?
Well, it's always valuable for the technologies to tech companies like a Google and Apple and Amazon to get involved somewhere in this space, because all appearances are now that at least the blockchain technology, the technology underlying Bitcoin, has a lot of applications. I was giving a talk a month or so ago to a group of people working in the fiber optics sector. And I pointed out to them, if you kind of look over history, about every 10 years, we get some breakthrough that really changes the paradigm for what's happening. The invention of Mosaic was one of those. The release of the cell phone to something commercial was one of those. The iPhone was actually one of those. One of those things that when it came out, no one was anticipating. No one knew they needed it until they saw it. Then they said, yes, that's exactly it. We're due for something like that again. So the question for us is, well, what goes into that kind of breakthrough technology, that every 10, maybe as much as 15-year technology? Blockchain is certainly one of those. So the tech companies have to be thinking about that, looking at it and saying, well, where can we use this to really knock somebody's socks off for the future? That's one thing they need to think about. The other is, what can they do to make their equipment, if they're in equipment, or maybe the software space, better adaptable for what Bitcoin or these other cryptocurrencies need? One of the challenges right now mm-hmm. with these blockchains is that in solving the mathematical puzzles, the primary expense is electricity. The computers are consuming, I don't remember what the numbers are, but fairly huge amounts of electricity constantly trying to solve the puzzles. Can you get that cost down? Because if you can, then everyone's going to be wanting to use your system to solve the puzzles.
When we look at all the competing interests in the Bitcoin world in terms of the various exchanges and the way that different countries are going to be responding to its impact and the way they'll try to regulate or not, the way the technology companies are going to get in, what do you look for in the coming, say, 6 to 12 months in terms of the fast movement and development of Bitcoin?
Well, I think the thing that there are two things that I think will probably start happening in the next year. One is the governments will start sorting out how they should think about these currencies. And maybe we'll get some regulatory clarity. I wouldn't expect a whole lot over the next year, but that's going to start gelling because people are now paying attention and trying to frame things in their minds. The other one is that there will be a new economics for this. If you look at who's involved in the whole cryptocurrency space, it's largely software engineers, mm-hmm. computer programmers, that are all writing code and enjoying what they're doing in that space. Over the past maybe 5 years or so, lawyers have started getting more involved because there have been some questions about securities and liabilities, so the lawyers have started getting involved. But there are hardly any economists thinking about this, or actually, I should say, involved in the space. And so things like, how do I know whether or not I can trust someone who's issuing a new currency? That's an economic question, and it's not addressed anyplace. How much should you have to pay? If you're creating a currency, how much should you benefit from it versus those who buy it? Not being addressed at this moment. The whole issue of supply. Is the supply tracking with demand so you have stability, or is it just machine-driven? That's an economic issue that people aren't dealing with yet. So economists need to start weighing in at some point to try and provide some insights, and I expect that to start growing over the next 12 months.
Do you imagine that over the next 12 months there'll be more winners or losers in this space?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have a strong opinion. I really can't say. There's, on one hand, you could easily have winners if the demand continues to grow, which I think it will. The losers will come in if there becomes more uncertainty, primarily through the regulatory space, or maybe a technology glitch, but I'm not expecting that to happen.
There are many who have not even gone to online banking, very concerned about safety issues. What about people who are getting into this space? You talked about a lot of the programmers who are deeply immersed, and there are many common folks who have no idea what all this means, just as they had no idea about many other technologies and how practical they would end up being in their lives. So the ability for people really on a common, you know, everyday basis to begin using Bitcoin, how far away do you think we are from seeing a ready implementation of this in just the normal course of affairs?
It depends upon where you are. I think in places like the U.S. and Europe, the Western economies, as long as they stay fairly stable, Bitcoin has an uphill battle against the existing currency because the existing currency is working pretty well for us. But suppose you go to countries like Mozambique or Venezuela, where the economy is very unstable. Bitcoin's actually something that's much more predictable and easier to use, perhaps, than the government-issued currencies. And if you go into places in Africa where people don't have banks don't matter to them because they couldn't afford a bank anyway. A lot of people are living on a dollar a day. You can't afford to give up 10% or 5% or 20% transaction fee to be able to engage in an economic transaction. But if we're talking about something you can do over your phone, which cell phones are very prevalent in these countries, and the cost of selling your fish to someone that's farther away from you or buying some vegetables from someone that's far away or some material to make clothing or to sell clothing that you've made, and the transaction fee is only less than 1%, that's a new market for you. The cost of adding that market's very small. Bitcoin has some real possibilities there.
I think people would be surprised to learn that Bitcoin already is the sixth largest currency in the world. Now, that can fluctuate. Do you think it can move up to third, second? Where do you see it going in the period ahead?
I don't know for sure. I have a tough time saying what that will be. I think it has great potential, but it has some real problems to solve that I've talked about, the supply management and how an entrepreneur can help deal with that volatility, because there are ways of doing that. Right now, everyone's engaging directly with the Bitcoin software. Someone could be a go-between that de-risks it by absorbing some of the volatility themselves, and that makes it easier for someone who's living on a dollar a day. If, you know, 40% drop in value, if they are down to 60 cents a day, that's devastating. But if someone absorbs that risk for them, that becomes much easier for them to use and absorb. So if we can solve those things, it's got some good potential.
Mark Jamieson from the American Enterprise Institute, thank you for joining us today for a very interesting conversation about Bitcoin. And I think people listening in really have a better sense of what we're talking about here. For many who don't read the financial pages, this is all a mystery and a glancing look that they've taken. But this gives us a penetrating view of what Bitcoin is. Thanks again for being with us on America Trends.
Now, it's my pleasure. Thank you for talking with me.